let me just see what else is going on in the news that we need to pay attention to quickly. There is stuff, believe it or not. Before we get to Kate Turkington, I'm going to get to her in a little bit too. I mentioned 9/11 and the anniversary of 9/11. Obviously, there's plenty of other good stuff to talk about this week that has been happening in the news. Plenty of it on the daily briefings. If you haven't caught up with what's happening there, let us know what you think of the daily briefings. I saw a couple of subscriptions going off in the last couple of minutes from people who have obviously heard us here and then decided they wanted to join in that conversation. And then I also see I can mimic a baboon sound very well, a deep bow. Okay, well, Bitcoin Butch, you're going to have to do that for us in person one day. Next time you're on the show, you'll have to do it. And then Papa Sos says, my girlfriend was eating an orange and a baboon grabbed it from her hand and she was about to take a bite, scraping her face. She needed stitches. Wow. Maybe she shouldn't be eating it in front of the baboons. You see how the girls have got to me? Now suddenly I'm on the baboon side. So maybe she shouldn't have been teasing the baboons by eating a juicy orange right in front of them. Very, very mean. That is unkind and indecent of your girlfriend. How rude. Okay. Lots of people very against the baboons, I see, in the comments section too. You guys have got to figure it out. You've got to warm. You've got to change your ways. You can't be anti-baboon after you've met Anine and Hannah on the show this morning. All right, let's get to one of my favorite people in the whole world and someone who is a very, very dear friend and who has the best stories, and she's got the most incredible sense of humor, and she knows more. She's wise beyond all of us. She's also extremely entertaining to be around, and she's traveled to more countries than I think anyone except maybe David Attenborough. I don't think there's anyone else who's ever been to more places than Kate Turkington. Best part about it is that she goes to these far-flung, adventurous places like Tunisia. She was in Tunisia. I think it was earlier this year. We'll check on that. She brought me a little gift, which I'm looking at right now on the wall. But she is today. How old are you this morning, Kate Turkington? Happy birthday.
92 years old, but think of it like this, Gareth, 8 years short of a century, 8 years short of a century. And I'm especially wearing, you can't really see it, but when I was doing some media training in Ghana a couple of years ago, the Ghanaians presented me with this wonderful top, which is so heavy I can hardly move. But as a kind of honour, I was very honoured. But what's so special about it, every single step, and it's a big garment.
Oh, wow.
It's a big garment. Every single stitch is done by hand. So I'm thinking somewhere in a village in the north of Ghana, somebody, some lady probably, maybe a man, I don't know,
yeah,
sat and sewed this garment. And just for you, it's the first time I've worn it. So so there we go. Very special.
Listen, I saw a tribute that a friend of yours, Carl, had posted about you the other day. And it immediately got me thinking. It was a very, very lovely, gushing, very sweet, yes, tribute. But none of it was untrue.
Gareth, a bit over the top, but that's our dear friend.
So look, he said some things that are indisputable. I mean, you have been to more places than anyone I know. You still, I mentioned Tunisia. That's off the beaten track. I mean, Tunisia doesn't have an enormous tourist industry. And not many people that I've ever met have been to ancient Carthage, which is where you were. You saw some Roman ruins that made me very jealous. And yes, you walked great distances and up high mountains. And well, at 92, some people would say that that is exceptional.
Listen, I want to edit that remark. I tottered, or shall we say I strolled through Roman ruins. I didn't hike, I strolled. And if I needed a hand, I asked for a hand, and I always asked for the hand of the drop-dead gorgeous guides who always dropped these gorgeous Arab drop-dead guys. But it was, and like you, I love Roman history and Hannibal. And but what was maybe the highlights of that trip was we went to the very northernmost tip of Africa. I think it's called Port Angela. Not very good at name, but Tunisia, there's a little point that points towards Europe. So that is the northernmost tip. And we had our photographs taken there, of course. So now I've been to the southernmost tip. I've been to the northernmost tip. I'm not sure actually what's the... I've been to Madagascar, but that doesn't count as Africa. What would be the easternmost point of Africa?
Probably the at the horn of Africa is probably Somalia or Somaliland, you know, right on the, and that's a dangerous place.
The
don't go there yet. I mean, there are many places that you can still go and visit before your century that are much more hospitable than Somalia.
Yes. Well, exactly. But, what's going on there? I did some media training recently with some people who are actually working in Somalia, and it's so terribly depressing to hear what's going on in that whole region. You know, it's another forgotten war. When, as you know, Gareth, we're both such cynics, when your popularity polls decline, what do? You start a war. I mean, Maggie Thatcher started the Falklands, Bush did start Iran, didn't he?
That was Kuwait.
Trump has started Iran. Never stops.
You could argue that Saddam started that whole thing by invading Kuwait, which he shouldn't have done. I don't dispute your point. Kate, this is an interesting place to launch a conversation I've wanted to have with you, for a very long time. You are, without doubt, one of the most optimistic, positive, thoughtful. You're generous with your energy. You have a lot of really good stuff to put out into the world. But sometimes, and for many people who listen to and watch this show, and people who are going about their business every day, there are lots of reasons to be down. You know, the economy, politicians. There are lots of things that can get people upset. You don't let those things bother you, though. I mean, you mentioned you're not unrealistic. You're not hiding your head in the sand. But there's no reason to let these things spoil your enjoyment of life.
Exactly. I mean, goodness gracious me. As we speak, I've got weaver birds in full, breathing plumage outside my window. I've got a cold... Oh, frog in my throat. Maybe a prince will pop out. Anyway, let me have a.
Go ahead.
There we go. That's better. So I've got a curled up rescue Jack Russell at my feet that I've threatened. He's got to keep quiet. I've got wonderful friends. I've got a wonderful family. Today, the weather's going to be gorgeous. It's going to be 25 degrees in Johannesburg. The Clivia's out. I mean, whoever thinks of war, and as you know, I grew up during World War II. I was 4 when World War II started, but they were. I think my parents must have been amazing because I think they must have kept the worst from my sister and I, because all I could remember is English countryside, long cycle rides, picnics, being a girl guide, loving school, all the good things. I'm sure there were bad things too, but I think you're born positive, Gareth. I think I have one friend we call the Bluebird of Happiness, and she's a dear, dear friend. But every time you say it to her, she'll say, "But yeah, but the weather will be terrible tomorrow." Or there's always, "But once you get over that," she's wonderful. She's great fun.
I'm
positive. And look at the country we live in. Of course there are potholes. Of course there's stuff breaking down. But I travel and have traveled a lot in Africa. I want to tell you, there's no country in Africa, well, certainly sub-Saharan Africa, maybe the whole of Africa, that's as good as South Africa. You need to travel. And as you know, Gareth, one of the reasons for that is we have a free media. I'm in Uganda, if I'm in Tanzania, one of my daughters was recently in Tanzania, I said, even in the market, don't say that the president is corrupt. You'll be in prison. Somebody will overhear you. You cannot speak your mind. We can say Cyril's an idiot, or meanwhile, the heavy hand of a policeman comes on my shoulder and whips me away. No. We have a free media. And, you know, I don't Uber a lot, but when I Uber, I love talking to the Uber drivers because they are so, so smart and they so know what's going on. So we do have our democracy. Goodness, it's only 30-something years old. As I've said to you before, Scotland's still trying to get away from England after 400 years. look at America. I mean, we're a young, struggling democracy, and I'm not being a Pollyanna. I know there's bad stuff too, but at least we are trying and we're getting there. But I want to tell you something. We had on Sunday, I went to something called the Founders Tea at
Flips. Yes.
And the Founders Tea is for all the people who graduated before 1986. So as you can imagine, there were some very old people. I mean, I was quite a spring chicken. But two things. First of all, they always have, it's like a tradition at the tea, they always have a gift for the oldest person there. So I was with my daughter, Tiffany. She said, "Mum, you haven't got a chance." So they started at 95. Hands up, who's 95? So a flurry of hands go up. 96. Oh, sorry about this. And I haven't got flu and I haven't got a cold. No, just the emotion.
You're not allowed to get sick because your last... I've been happy
I'm
and thrilled. And I've been
a fiddle.
I've been so lucky to be invited to at least your last four or five birthdays, and you make an effort to celebrate them every year.
Yes.
I'm very honored. And
I want a wonderful outfit. But just, Gareth, let me just finish my story.
Yes, go on, the Founders Tea.
The person who won the oldest was a 100-year-old practicing doctor who goes to his surgery every day, walks without a stick, was upright, gave a lovely little speech telling us all the secret to a long life is to keep working. 100 years old. There you go. And look at David Attenborough. But what? It's a long way I'm getting to. But the Vice Chancellor, who's one of the most distinguished, highly acclaimed nuclear physicists in the world, absolutely wonderful man, Professor Zeblon Vilakazi. He gave a speech and he used the most wonderful metaphor because at Vits, they have, I think it's the most, certainly one of the most advanced AI labs in Africa.
Yes.
And he's hoping to make Vits the new MIT of Africa, which he will, I have no doubt. But he used such an interesting metaphor. He was talking about AI, and he said, "We're standing at the quantum portal." And as we go through in the next 20 years, life as we know it is going to change dramatically. And I thought to myself, because I use AI quite a lot, sensibly. I thought to myself, do I actually want to be alive in the next 20 years to see? And then, of course, I suffer from FOMO, fear of missing out. So I thought probably I would. And then I thought to myself, Gareth, people said that when they first printed the Bible. They said that when the printing press was invented. They said that at the Industrial Revolution. They said that, what was it in the year 2000? Y2K.
But you, I mean, Kate, you were there for at least half of those that you just mentioned.
Every brand new invention that humankind comes up with, which is life-changing, people say that's the end, we're all going to be killed and whatever. Let's see. Look, I'll have to come back and haunt you and find out.
I don't disagree with anything that you've said. But
I can't hear you very well. You've gone very quiet.
Can you hear me now? Hello?
Bit better. Better? Yes.
Yeah. So I don't want to disagree with anything you've said. I think it's all absolutely spot on. My only problem is I don't know that I'd want a 100-year-old doctor. With all the love in the world for that guy, he sounds terrific, but I'm not so sure I'd like to have him, you know, operating.
I have to say the same thought into my head, but to have him there as somebody experienced and knowledgeable while a robot is doing my knee operation, that's fine. Mm. That's fine, because that's one thing I think I'm quite a bit sad about when I die. I do have, says she humbly, but I do. I have such a lot of knowledge and experience. I'm quite sorry that that will go. But then I think, no, I've passed on so much to children and grandchildren. And I have a new great-grandson who's just, I think he's 2.5 months old. He's just a blob.
Congratulations.
At this stage.
I think that's lovely.
So I think that wisdom will...
Well, why do you think, what do you think I'm hanging around with you for? Do you think it's purely out of altruism?
Oh, well.
You know, you do. You have a lovely family. I've met many of your grandchildren, and I know all your children. And there are some lovely comments here about how you look so amazing. I mean, Carl has a less kind thing about your voice. Kate has the face of a 60-year-old and the voice of a 110-year-old. She's great.
I do. I'm sorry about this. I never get frogs in my throat. Must be sheer terror at being talking to Gareth. I thought that with this frog in my throat, it might sound all sexy, like Juliette. What was her name? The gorgeous French. Can't remember. I'm bad at name. But just to assure your caller, your WhatsApp or whatever, no nips or tucks, I promise you. No injections, no, nothing. What the hell? I've earned all these.
Wrinkles, how many
and lines.
How many countries is it? Have you done a calculation of how many places?
Gareth, I don't know. I really don't. I've never counted. I'm quite jealous. One of my daughters, and it's something I've always wanted to do, went to Manaus in Brazil to that opera house. There was a very famous movie called Fitzcarraldo, how this maverick Irishman, it was a true story, decided to build an opera house, a copy of the Paris Opera House in the middle of the Amazon jungle, and they dragged the building materials over rivers. Anyway, he built it, and it flourished, and it closed down and went into decay. Daughter Tara says it's totally been restored. It's got a permanent orchestra, and she said it's like a dream. You come out of the jungle, and there's There's his opera house. I love it when people have dreams like that.
You know, I think that my idea of heaven would be a time machine. I think that the very best thing imaginable for me in the afterlife would be to be able to get into a machine and observe. You're not allowed to interfere and play any part in it, but to go back in time and see either, you know, the dinosaurs or ancient Rome or Queen Hatshepsut in Egypt or, you know, Charlemagne being crowned in the Vatican in 800 AD. I mean, to me, I'd never run out of places that I'd want to visit in the past or in the future.
Let me give you a caveat here. It would depend on the circumstances in which you found yourself. I mean, I'd love to go back to ancient Rome, but I'd want to be a matriarch, a Roman matron, or I don't want to go back as a serf. And you know, all these, and over the years, I interviewed so many these past life people.
Yes.
People who have past lives were always princesses. They weren't sweaty peasants digging potatoes in fields. They were always Cleopatra or whatever. So if you went back in time, we don't want you a slave or a gladiator in the Roman arena.
No. Just for an opportunity to boast about your very interesting children and grandchildren, because they are, and they've all inherited a little bit of Kate Turkington. We've got financial whiz kids, we've got adventurers, we've got public speakers, we've got tremendously smart people in your family. I mean, that must be quite a sense of deferred achievement in the children and grandchildren. Even if you hadn't had, which you obviously have, the extraordinary life that you've had up to these 92 years, and lots of happy birthdays are pouring in too, Kate. So I hope it's all getting to you. But it's nice to see the next generation and the generation after that carrying on the good work, right?
Yes. And making some of the same mistakes that I made as well. And you have to keep your mouth shut.
Like
you
what? Have to keep like your like mouth what?
Zipped. Anybody.
What kind of mistakes have they made that you made?
Oh, I'm not saying.
Oh, come on. There's got to be one or two you can tell us.
I haven't even told them. Gareth. No. Actually, do you know? Now, this is an interesting thing, and this also makes me sound like Pollyanna. I don't believe in my very long life, and I've met thousands of people, I really have. I don't believe I've ever met anybody who's evil, and I'm not sure what evil means. But I have a very good friend who's a top psychoanalyst. And she claims she has met evil several times. Now, I don't know if I'm just naive and I just see good in people, or if I do see bad in people, I get rid of them very quickly. But I've watched evil. I've watched the Holocaust. I remember, this is a bit of a dark note. My mother, father, sister, and I used to go to what were called the pictures every Thursday, yes, to the movies. You would have called it the bioscope here. And between the two movies, there was a B movie and A movie that was a newsreel. Remember, the
British
Pathé.
They'd have
the first shots of Belsen came up. And my mother put her hands in front of my face and said, "Don't look." And she said to my father, "Put your hand in front of Rita, my sister." And of course, I peeped through my fingers. Those images will never, ever, ever leave me. I was what, 45? I was 11, 10 when that happened. So I really, you know, as you know, I'm totally non-committed, nothing. I mean, I look at religions, I appreciate religions, I see the good, I also see the bad they do, but they're not actually for me. And I really don't believe I have met a very bad person. I think maybe I'm very naive. Have you?
No, I think everybody, you know, the villain never sees themselves as the villain, even in a comic book. They think they're doing something good. They have a vision of a utopia that they want to reach. This is true of Stalin, of Mao, of Hitler, of
Paul and Iago.
You know, from Shakespeare, Iago, exactly. They all think they're going to make the world better. So from their point of view, they're not evil. From their point of view, they're the ones who are fighting the good fight. And I think about this quite a lot. I'm glad that you brought it up because I haven't found the answer. I don't know if any of us ever will. But it seems to me that it's a really, really simplistic and quite degraded version of what reality looks like to say these people are good, those people are bad, and everyone always puts themselves in the good people category, right? Mm-hmm. Just as you were saying, when you have a past life, you're always an emperor or a king or a Cleopatra. Nobody's the peasant who's sweating in the fields and being beaten by their lord. People don't ever see themselves as the villain.
No. But I say, mind you, having said that, who are the most interesting, certainly in literature, who are the most interesting characters? It is Iago, it is all the villains, because when I was teaching at Wits, I used to say this, teaching Shakespeare, the thing about evil and badness is it's got a lot of energy. That's why people are attracted to these, not malevolent, but quite sexy, powerful dictators, because they have this kind of maybe dark energy.
Well, I mean, actors always prefer playing the bad guys. Actors, any actor you'd ever met will always tell you it's much more fun. You know, we lost Tim Curry 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I saw that.
And he said famously in a clip that I just saw recently, he said that, it's always, and you know, he had those eyebrows and those that face that was halfway between it and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And he went, well, it's always more fun to be the bad guys, and kind of gave that laugh. He was terrific.
I must quickly tell you my Dolly Parton story.
I
adore Dolly Parton.
Yes.
Jolene. I was working at a PBS television station in Austin, Texas, and their very, very big show, and I think it may still be running, was a country music show called Austin City Limit. And everybody in the country music world, I met Millie Nelson, I met Chris Christopherson, gorgeous. And I'm it's a bit of a overstatement to say I met Dolly Parton, but I went into her dressing room. I had to go and call her for something. So I went into the dressing room and she was tiny. People forget because she wore such high heels. She was tiny. She was only 5 foot and she didn't have her wig on and she had this sort of bum fluff on her hair. And a few sentences I exchanged with her, she was absolutely lovely, a really, really nice person. And in my experience, as you know, I've interviewed everybody and taught media training to presidents, everybody, celebs. My experience is when people are at the top, they're usually lovely. They're confident, they're content. It's the people who are clawing their way up or falling down who are the difficult people. But generally speaking, people are nice. And really, I mean, we get international credit for this. I write about it when I write travel books. South Africans are among the friendliest people in the world. If I go out of my gate now and there's a guy walking past, I say, morning, how are you? Can you imagine saying that in Sainsbury's in Salisbury?
You'd oh, God, no, they'll...
filthy look.
I remember being on the London Underground probably about 10 or 12 years ago. And I looked around, and this was before everybody was on their phones all the time. So it may even have been longer than 12 years ago.
Yeah.
But people had headphones on and they were ignoring each other, and they didn't even acknowledge the presence of other people. There was certainly no conversation going on. Mm-mm. And, you know, I'm South African, so we smile at people, and geez, you've got to be very careful in London if you smile at somebody. It's a sexual harassment.
Exactly. Or New York. Or,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or New York. But that's why I love South America, because I love South Americans. And I love South America because I always feel it's on the brink of chaos, like South Africa is. It's got that nervous kind of energy, and you go to Brazil or you go to Argentina or Ecuador, anywhere, haven't been to the very top yet, but people are so friendly and nice and open. I've even been to the Falkland Islands, and they're not very big, you know. I actually waded across the long grass in gumboots to see the was it the macaroni penguins? The penguins with
yeah, yeah, yeah. Beautiful, sisters. Beautiful animals.
And then we had tea. We were given tea in a house that was straight out of the 70s. It was like a soapy. It was like a British soapy.
Wow.
We were given tea, and it was Mr. and Mrs. Brown. It's what? No, not that Mrs. Brown. It was quite extraordinary, and the people there consider themselves English, not British, English.
Sure. Yes.
And now it's all flaring up again. And I mean, just because they found oil, heaven help the penguins is all I can say. Oh, now, yep. Let me quickly ask you something. As sure. You know, I've been president of Sandton BirdLife for like 15 years. But at the moment, all bird clubs in South Africa have been asked to nominate a bird for Bird of the Year 2027, and people are offering the blue swallow and Boeta's lark because it's about to go extinct. You know who I've put forward? You could
who?
Almost guess. You could
what?
Almost guess. The hardy-dar. I love hardy-dars. They're cheerful. And they punctuate the morning, and I love them. They're always, always cheerful.
No, Kate, come on. First of all, they're not by any stretch of the imagination our most interesting bird. They're full of ticks and fleas and parasites. They land in your garden. Your dogs get sick, eat their rubbish. They're dreadful things. And if you've seen what they look like up close, they're also very, very ugly.
Oh, no. You look on their wing. There's something called a speculum, which sounds like a gynecological instrument. But it's
it is.
Not. There's a beautiful glossy purple green on the yeah. outside of their wings. And, you know, the other thing we overlook, we've got something called the Cape Sparrow, which is a really handsome little bird. And when birders come to South Africa, because it's endemic to South Africa, they get out to O.R. Tambo or the Cape Town Airport, and they rush to the windows to look for the Cape Sparrow. Good friend of mine, birder Ian Sinclair, he said he used to love it because he could go and have a whiskey at the bar while all the birders were at the windows in our tambo looking for the Cape Sparrows. Something
Listen,
else, if you don't know and you're watching a Cape Sparrow, have a look out of your window. They're really handsome, black bib. Very smart little birds.
Well, you mentioned Ian Sinclair. I remember he wrote a number of bird books. When I was a kid, I had one of his bird books in my bird collection. My brother is still a massive birder.
Is he?
Oh, good, yeah. But you're still the president. Are they planning to oust you at some point, or are you staying like Mugabe until the end?
Joke, they're waiting for me to fall off my perch.
All right. So a few things that people are asking in the comments and that I haven't asked you before. First of all, if you had to live outside of South Africa, you already mentioned how much you love it here. I don't doubt a word of that. Where would you live if you had to, at gunpoint? Someone said you've got to move anywhere else in the world, all expenses paid, you can have whatever kind of a life you like. Where would you go?
I think I'd go back to Ireland. I lived in Ireland for 7 years. And even though the weather's not great, and probably the island I lived in has changed quite a lot, but one of my daughters was born in Ireland. I love Ireland, even with all its, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's that Protestant Catholic hatred still goes on.
The troubles.
Simmers below the surface. But you can't beat the Irish for their wit and their quick wit. I can remember many moons ago, before you were born, an example of Irish wit. I was a student, and in my vac, I was working at a very distinguished old English pub as a barmaid. Oh, I loved it, loved that job. And these two Irish labourers used to come in. They would drop their gorgeous blue eyes, black curly hair. And I used to tease them all the time. And one of them said, you know, with all the arrogance of an 18-year-old, one of them was telling me one night, he said, "I'm reading this very interesting book, Kate." And I said, "Can you read? You're Irish." Quick as a flash, he said, "Oh, yes, I've got a light in my cave." I mean, quick as a flash.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, the Irish, they're terrific people. Look, again, just as we were talking about with evil and good or with past lives, everyone, when you meet them and you actually spend time with them and you're interested in them, is terrific and fascinating. Very few people are so absolutely dreadful that they disappoint you on all the levels. But there are those people, rare as they may be. I try to stay away from them. I know you do too. We've mentioned your family. You have very interesting friends. You've got extraordinarily young, vital, exciting, good-looking, intelligent, erudite friends who've also traveled all over the world, some of them with you. And that's important, right? Having people around you who are not just family, who fill up your days with laughter and ridiculousness.
And also a very good tip for you, Gareth, when most of my friends are much, much younger than me, so nobody's going to die off before I do, because I hear old people saying, "Oh, all my friends have died, and one of my friends, a slip of a girl, turned 73 yesterday." I mean, a mere slip of a girl. And also, where I live, I share a property with one of my daughters, as you know. So they're in the main house, and I'm below stairs. Got a self-contained cottage, but in the house there are three students, 21, 19, two at 19, 21. They come down and talk to me, not always, just when, if they've got girlfriend trouble or whatever. Yeah. But it's so nice to have that intergenerational stuff as well.
And Kate, that's quite an African thing, because...
Sorry, that's the rescue Jet Russell. Just let me scream at it. Shut up, Archie.
No, I've met Archie, and Archie lies under the table there and farts the whole way through our conversation.
I mean, SPCA told me and they're so wonderful. This was the Santon SPCA. He was put forward as a Jack Russell. He's got a Jack Russell face, and the rest of him is pavement special In fact, I read it recently. I'd forgotten the expression. It's a very English expression. We used to say Heinz 57 varieties. I haven't heard that. You saw a dog, that's got Heinz 57 varieties. But I'm just trying to tell friends of mine whose old dogs have just died, don't get some gorgeous whatever. Go to an SPCA. Oh. I daren't go because I'd come home. I once nearly came home with a donkey. And they know the provenance most of the time. And what's so sad, Gareth, is people, our vet was telling us, people are bringing him perfectly healthy dogs. They're emigrating and they don't want to leave their dogs. So would he put them down? He said, no, I'm not putting down perfectly healthy.
I can imagine nothing worse than... Imagine what kind of people we're going overseas. So the family pet who's been with us for 8 years, we're just going to leave in a cage or have them put down. I think it's awful.
Yeah.
I heard a story about that the other day when, you know, I've got Alice the Spaniel and she...
Yes, gorgeous.
She is one of those fancy, gorgeous dogs. Not a rescue yours, but I heard that some family had moved to, I don't know, Canada or something. And they had two little spaniels like that, and they just took them to the SPCA. I mean, to me, that's just criminal.
Yeah, yeah. Criminal. Well, this is also the advantage of having lots of friends. I remember I've taken over two dogs, both dead now, but over the years I've taken in two dogs because one of my friends was moving into a retirement village. They wouldn't let her keep her dogs, and another one who was going overseas, and I took his dog. I can't imagine. Maybe that's, you know, 92 in age, friends, family, but also in 92 years, I have never, ever been without a dog. When I was a university student, I had a dog.
Oh, Kate, I'd rather be without people than without dogs.
Yes, you can't. Or a cat, or a mouse, or a rat.
Goldfish, yeah.
Or not hamsters. They breed like hamsters. But we've been through the aviary. We've been through hamsters. We've been through rabbits. Oh, and I think I told you, I found that wonderful quote from the poet W.H. Auden recently. I thought I knew his work, Journey of the Magi. I should grow old, I should grow old, I should wear my trousers rolled. But I found this wonderful quote, time runs like rabbits.
Oh, I love
time
that.
Time runs like rabbits.
All right, so
how true is that?
Question here from Limited Edition. You can see his picture in the left there. Limited Edition says, quick question. Do you still get people who ask you out on dates at 92, Kate? If so, how do you react to that?
Let me just... Do you get still... Oh, I have gentlemen friends like Gareth who come visit me.
I come calling.
I did recently... somebody I met while I was tiger fishing on the Dzini Dam. And maybe I did get a very serious proposal of marriage when I was 79. I was sitting in Florence with a glass of Prosecco with a very good friend. And he said to me, what would you say if I asked you to marry me? I said, don't be ridiculous. Ridiculous. I wouldn't consider it for a second. And he came to South Africa and the family loved him and they couldn't understand it. No, been there, done that. And I adore men. I adore men. I really do. I adore women too, but I've been the most dreadful flirt all of my life. And I have a line. I'm going to offer it to you. Shouldn't really tell you. It always works with any man. I go up to them with a winsome smile on my face and I say, if I was 40 years younger, you wouldn't have a chance.
Never, oh, that's great.
Ever fails.
Well, you do also put a very high, you esteem good looks.
You've gone very quiet again, Gareth.
Hang on, I'm sure it's not me, Kate. It must be you.
Yeah, maybe.
Can you hear me now?
Maybe not. Anyway.
So you place quite a high esteem on being around good-looking people, which I agree with.
No, not necessarily. Because
no, I think it's important.
The most sexy man I ever met among many was, people probably don't know him. He was called, he's dead now, John Mortimer, the English playwright. And he wrote Rumpole of the Bailey. He was a judge himself. And he was short and he looked a bit like a toad and he had a limp, but his mind and his wit. And I think that's what's most attractive. I learned that very early in my life. I had a gorgeous looking boyfriend who was as thick as a plank. And got rid of him very quickly. But the wit and the mind and that's what's important. That's what's important. Richard Burton was quite sexy too.
Well, look, I just think that if nature and God have bestowed on you an attractiveness, I think that that's something that the rest of us should be appreciative of.
Yes.
Oh. Huh. And a fine mind and a wit. There's John Mortimer.
There he is. Look at him. Oh, well done, whoever found that. But he was absolutely amazing. And Alan and I, my late husband and I, had breakfast with him. And he was telling, he had these rallies in Pietermaritzburg who'd started, he said, I can't believe it, had started a temperance brewery in Pietermaritzburg. I don't know if that still exists or not. But
how do you have a temperance brewery?
Now you can buy all this non-alcoholic beer. And what's the point? I don't drink beer, but I'm still a whiskey drinker. Enjoy.
Well, that's very sophisticated. What is your point of view on other vices? On
like what?
Well, gambling, drugs. Rock and roll,
I am
sex.
Actually, and you know, I like to think I'm the most open kind of liberal person, but I am seeing the devastating effect that online gambling is having on people. And even in the schools, kids who've been given credit cards by their parents are actually hooked on online gambling, and everywhere you go, it blasts into your face. It blasts into your face and road signs. We can't see a Springbok unless he's absolutely advertising online gambling. Well, maybe that's a bit of an overstatement, but
you're not wrong.
Online. It's the most invidious, dreadful thing.
And Kate, it's making everybody poorer, except the gambling companies.
And yes, I know one tragic story of a wonderful lady who'd worked for a family for 30 years. Her behavior began to change. Finally, she began stealing from the family in quite a bad way. And she was addicted to online gambling. This promise of easy money. And as you know, I don't do money. I did a podcast on a money show recently, as a guest. And I said, look, I'm the wrong person because Bruce Whitfield once asked me on his money show. I was saying, I don't have any money. I have a roof over my head, I have a car, and I have food and a family and friends. But he said to me quite seriously, if you were in your little car and you were at the traffic light at the robot and a red Ferrari drew up beside you, what would you say? He said. And I said, how vulgar.
Yeah, I'm in agreement.
Said that, when I got my first BBC TV talk show, I did go out and buy myself a pale blue, powder blue MGB, and I went on my very first honeymoon in a Jaguar XK14, I think it's called, which had been lent to us by an ex-boyfriend, which apparently was quite a special car. But I'm not into cars. I'm not into money.
I don't. Did you ever hear about, it came up on the show the other day, about St. Francis of Assisi and his four motivations? So St. Francis of Assisi said that every human being in the world has a predilection for one of these things, and maybe we can figure out what yours is now. Power, pleasure, money, or reputation. And I think I know which one yours is.
I think it will be reputation.
Do you think so? I don't
know. Because
I get the feeling it really might be because you're such an adventurer and because you're such a person of experience. You know, you want to meet people, have discussions, laugh, enjoy, learn. I think it's pleasure. And pleasure doesn't mean just self-indulgence or hedonism. Pleasure means that seeking adventure, that thrill that you get out of doing something new. I think that's you.
I think, Gareth, this is a very deep philosophical discussion for another time. I think very often happiness, you only realize afterwards you were happy. Sometimes, yes, you are in the moment. Yep. You're in the bush. That's what I love about being in the bush. You're in the moment. You're concentrating. You can't be thinking of past, present, future, whatever, because you're looking for a bird. And the Cape Sparrow's just popped onto my feeding tray there. You're in the moment. You're concentrating. Is an elephant coming around the corner or what? I've never sought pleasure. Well, maybe one kind.
All right. No. I mean, I could be wrong. You know that none of them are better than any of the others. I mean, I don't think I'm the kind of person who would live to your age and be thrilled if I had an enormous bank account and no friends and no experiences. I also don't think that I would be thrilled with the outcome if I were in politics and became president. So power is not my thing either. And reputation has its good and its bad, right?
Yeah. Yes, I think a bit of power. But then again, often you don't realize you've got power when you have got it. You don't go into a class of university students thinking, I've got power because I know so much more. You go in thinking, oh, there's something I want to share. I want to get them to be excited about what I'm excited about. Mind you, I do have people, in fact, at the Founders Tea on Sunday, very, very old lady came up to me and said, oh, Kate Turkington, you were one of my lecturers at Wits. And I looked at her and I thought, but you're so old. How can that possibly be?
Well,
I think there is a lot of ageism. I think I don't experience it, but I do have friends, perhaps you've got white hair, There's a kind of, oh, somebody called me my dear recently. I was furious. It's so petulant. My dear, I can't remember where I was. Come along, my dear. I said to him, I'm not your dear. I will never be. And I said to him, I know you don't mean it, but you're being very patronizing. On the other hand, having somebody say, come along, Gogo, is lovely.
Yeah, that's different.
<It's> lovely.
That doesn't feel patronizing. All right, so no. What are we doing for your birthday? Are there lots of people coming?
Any second now, quite a lot of family are going to come through my door with balloons, I know, and whatever. Then I've got a lunch with my three closest friends, two of the daughters and one of the granddaughters. And then, of course, tomorrow we have a party. So, and the weather's going to be fair. And Gareth, you will know, at my 90th birthday, it was freezing. It was this time of year. And somebody, I told you this, Gareth, somebody actually ended up in ER with hypothermia. But she came, now we go back. Her husband is lovely. He was a colleague of mine. She would never really be a friend, and I know they won't be watching this. She came out from Durban in a little thin dress, and the temperature that night was like 9 degrees, I think. So.
All right. Well, I'm very excited. I will dress up. The travel is a travel theme. We have to dress up in some sort of travel trophy.
An amazing travel trophy. Somebody will come with a pet leopard, I'm sure.
Will you be wearing that Ghanaian outfit?
God, here's my family arriving.
All right. I'm going to let you go.
Come in.
I'll let you go. Okay. I'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, then. Okay. Bye, everybody.
That's just delightful. God, you know that we should all get to 92 and have that much to talk about, that much life in us, that much happiness and optimism and family coming in at 8 o'clock to sing happy birthday with balloons. I think that's very special. She's a very special woman. I'm delighted that I can call her a friend. The great Kate Turkington. What a way to end this Friday morning's show. I hope that you will have an excellent weekend. I will catch up with you next week. And if you've signed up for the daily briefing, I'll catch up with you on Monday. If you haven't yet, then what the hell's wrong with you? We will see you next week. Have an awesome weekend. Bye, everybody.